From WKAR's Studio S at Michigan State University, this is Current Sports.
Oh, what is up, beautiful people? That's right, you are now locked into WKAR's Current Sports. I am your host, Al Martin. It is Hump Day. That's right, Wednesday, April 20th. 2016, we've got a great hour in store for all of our listeners out there. Of course, we will recap what took place last night at Joe Louis Arena. The Detroit Red Wings falling to the Tampa Bay Lightning in Game 4 of the first round of the Stanley Cup playoffs. A tough loss for the Wings. We will recap what exactly happened, how it happened, and now what that loss does to the Wings in this series as they will try to bounce back on Thursday out in Tampa Bay. We will also talk about a pretty big name in the world of UFC who has decided to hang it up. That's right, retire at a very young age. He certainly has a bright career in front of him, but he's a bit shaken up due to an occurrence that occurred over the weekend in a certain fight. So we'll let you know who that fighter is. Also, live in studio, we will invite a dear friend of WKAR's Current Sports by the name of Anthony Iani. That's right, he is a former Michigan State men's basketball player and national motivational speaker who is doing some incredible things in his post-basketball career, and he is also such a big advocate for autism awareness. It is Autism Awareness Month, so we will invite him to the show. That and so much more, folks. Call in 517-355-9527, 517-355-9527. But hey, you know what's next. Here are your Current Sports Quick Hit Headliners, brought to you by the one, the only, Mike Masson.
According to St. John's, former Michigan State forward Marvin Clark Jr. has transferred to the Red Storm. St. John's announced the move this morning. Per NCAA rules, Clark Jr. will have to sit out next season and have 2 years of eligibility remaining. Quote, "I had an immediate connection with Coach Mullen and the coaching staff," Clark said in the statement. "I feel extremely comfortable moving forward at a place where I can be an integral part of the future success of the program. I look forward to taking on the challenge of joining this team and institution and helping restore excitement in a program with such a rich basketball tradition." Best of luck to Marvin Clark. The annual draft for the Green and White Spring Game took place yesterday. The draft features the Michigan State seniors, already divided into a green team and a white team as captains, who then hold a draft to decide where the remaining players will go from the two teams. Offensive lineman Brian Allen was the first pick in the Michigan State Green-White draft for the second straight year. Michigan State coach Mark D'Antonio was an interested spectator. The draft allowed him to see how younger Spartan players were judged by their senior peers. The Spartan spring football game will take place Saturday, 3 p.m. at Spartan Stadium, and admission is free. The Michigan State Spartan softball team fell to the number 2 Michigan Wolverines Dan Arbor yesterday, 8-0. Michigan exploded for 5 runs in the 5th inning to blow the game open after previously only scoring 2 runs in the 1st and 1 in the 3rd. The Wolverines got a pair of home runs and 2 doubles in the game just a week after MSU didn't yield an extra base hit in a 3-zip UM win in East Lansing. The Spartans only had 3 hits in the day, stranding 4 runners, and will now head to Chicago next for a 3-game series at Northwestern that begins Friday evening. The number 23 Michigan State Spartan baseball team lost to Notre Dame yesterday at McLean Stadium, falling 1-0. It was a tight game throughout, with the difference being a 6th-inning home run by Notre Dame's Ryan Lidge. Notre Dame starting pitcher Michael Hearn earned the complete game win, while MSU sophomore Keegan Barr had the longest outing of his career, going 7 1/3 innings, just allowing 3 hits to Notre Dame. Spartans will host Western Michigan today at 3:05 p.m. The Detroit Red Wings dropped Game 4 last night to the Tampa Bay Lightning, 3-2 the final, giving Tampa a 3-1 series lead. Lightning jumped out to a 2-zip lead, but the Wings responded with goals from Darren Helm and Gustav Nyquist late in the second to pull even. Tampa scored all 3 of their goals on the power play, the last coming from Andre Palat with just 2:59 remaining in regulation. The series now heads back to the Sunshine State for Game 5 on Thursday night, which becomes a must-win for the Red Wings. The Detroit Pistons are back in action tonight as they take on the Cleveland Cavaliers in Game 2 of their series. Cleveland took Game 1 106-101 on Sunday to grab the early 1-zip lead. The Pistons will look to slow down the Cavs' superstar trio of LeBron James, Kyrie Irving, and Kevin Love, who combined for 81 points in Game 1. Detroit will also hope to continue shooting well from the field as they shot over 50% as a team. Tip-off is set for 8 p.m., and the game can be seen on Fox Sports Detroit or TNT. After an off day on Monday, the Detroit Tigers were back in action last night, opening a road series with the defending World Series champion Kansas City Royals. KC took the win, however, 8-6 the final. Salvador Perez drove in 5 runs for the Royals, including a 2-out, 3-run home run in the 5th that put Kansas City up for good, 8-2. Detroit struggled to pick up key hits as they failed to get a hit with the bases loaded in 3 separate innings. But catcher Jared Saltalamacchia continued his power surge as he homered for the 3rd straight game with a 3-run shot in the 7th. Game 2 of the series takes place tonight, first pitch scheduled for 7:15. UFC featherweight champion Conor McGregor announced via Twitter yesterday that he has decided to retire. The complete tweet reads, quote, "I have decided to retire young. Thanks for the cheese. Catch yous later." UFC president Dana White later said that McGregor has been pulled from the main event at UFC 200 due to his unwillingness to participate in mandatory promotional activities. Those are your current sports quick hit headliners. If you want to call in and share your thoughts, please do so at 517-355-9527. 517-355-9527. Let's start the show.
Yes, and that is how we start this afternoon's WKAR's Current Sports. Welcome, welcome, welcome to the show, ladies and gents, boys and girls. We are always honored when you allow us to be a part of your weekday afternoon. We've got a ton to talk about, folks. And of course, we start with what you just heard. Last night at the Joe, downtown Detroit, the Detroit Red Wings getting it on against the Tampa Bay Lightning. That was an entertaining game, I must say. A very entertaining game. Went down to the wire. The Wings down early in that game. A 2-0 goal deficit in the middle of the second period. But clawed their way back into that matchup. But unfortunately, in Game 4, the final read 3-2 in favor of the Tampa Bay Lightning. And the Lightning now lead the series at 3-1. Yes, it's looking pretty bleak for Hockey Town right now. And Game 5 will take place on Thursday out in Tampa Bay if the Detroit Red Wings are going to pull off a miracle here and rally to beat Tampa Bay. They are going to have to win out the rest of the way, win 3 straight with 2 of the next three games taking place out in Tampa Bay, Florida. Folks, call in if you want to be a part of today's show. And thanks to Mike Masson, who did a great job rattling off our quick hit headliners for this Wednesday afternoon. If you want to call in to be a part of today's show, you know that number, 517-355-9527, 517-355-9527. You know, you can also go to our Facebook page at facebook.com/currentsports. If you leave us a comment there, of course, I will read it here live on our airwaves. And you can also tweet me at AlMartinWKAR. And you want to stick around today because we've got a hot show live in studio. We will be inviting Anthony Iani, former Michigan State University men's basketball player and renowned national motivational speaker. Anthony will be live in studio to talk about Autism Awareness Month, and we'll also chat a bit of Michigan State men's basketball with him and, you know, talk about whether or not if he's over the loss to Middle Tennessee State now. Of course, as you just heard in our headliners, Marvin Clark Jr. transferring to St. John's. Did Ant see that coming, and how close is he to Marvin Clark and both Javon Best, the two transfer from Michigan State? So we'll chat it up with Ant. You don't want to miss that. But I want to start with the Wings and really dive into what exactly happened yesterday at the Joe. And first off, I want to give a hats off to the hottest men in all of playoff hockey right now. And who I'm talking about is Nikita Kucherov. How good has Nikita Kucherov been throughout this series? Get this, Kucherov actually has 5 goals. 5 goals alone in this series. No one else, no other player in the Stanley Cup playoffs has 5, folks, up to this point. And get this, no Red Wing has more than 1 goal throughout this series. Wow, he's been absolutely fantastic, and he was that and more last night. The Lightning's first win in the D all season. And you know, I said this, once the dust had settled on this one, I sat back and kind of looked at the Detroit Red Wings year that they had, and Detroit has struggled all season when it comes to putting together back-to-back solid efforts that lead to dubs. The Wings can't close, and they cannot put together a string of solid games that lead to wins at the end of the day. Very rarely did you see the Wings, if at all, win back-to-back games this season. And that certainly was a bugaboo last night. You know, they had a great outing, the best game that they played all series in Game 4 on Sunday, getting that win, and again, not bowing out in a sweep. And then they follow that up with a lackluster effort in Game 5. And get this, though, and you know, the Wings really shot themselves in the foot when you really evaluate this game. All 3 of Tampa Bay's goals came due to the power play. They were 3 of 5 on the night when it came to the power play, folks. And what's so interesting about that stat is that when you evaluate how Tampa Bay played throughout the entire year when it came to power play opportunities, Tampa Bay was among one of the worst teams in capitalizing on the power play, folks. They were actually 3rd from last in the entire NHL when it comes to power play efficiency. And the Wings gave them 3 last night. Oh, that's tough, folks. That's tough. So, again, now the Wings have to go and win 3 straight. The Lightning has to only strike once. Pun intended there. that's all that has to happen here, folks. The Lightning just have to win 1 game out of the next 3. And it is kaput for the Detroit Red Wings. If they do go out, it will be the 3rd straight season that the Detroit Red Wings have lost in the first round of the Stanley Cup playoffs. Folks, call in. What do you think about the Wings' chances moving forward? And what do you think about last night's loss to the Lightning at home at the Joe? 517-355-9527. 517-355-9527. I want to invite the man behind the glass, our fantastic engineer of WKAR's Current Sports. He hails from Nollins, Isaac Constance. How you doing, my man?
Doing well. Enjoying hockey season, actually. You and I were at the Lansing Lugnuts game yesterday, which was terrific. Actually, a walk-off single in the bottom of the ninth from the Luggies. So
walk-off
that
win
was
for
great.
The Lugs. Yeah.
Came back.
Yeah, and it was so crazy. We were sitting there, Isaac. This shows you the mindset of reporters sometimes,
yes,
right? We're sitting there saying, okay, all right, it's the fifth inning, right? And we're sitting there shooting the game. And Isaac and I are both talking about the game and saying, okay, the Wings are playing. We would like to get home to see the rest of the Wings game because, the puck dropped right when, of course, that game started between the Lugnuts and Tin Caps last night, Fort Wayne Tin Caps last night. We're sitting there saying, okay, we want to get home to watch that. We'll leave around the sixth inning. Well, lo and behold, it's a tie game 2-2. We didn't want to miss what could possibly be the game-winning run. So, you know, it ended in stellar fashion. Again, the Lugnuts' first walk-off win for the season. So I'm just glad it didn't go extra innings, Isaac.
Oh, yeah. And you and I were saying, obviously it's a rule of media not to cheer from the press box, but I think it's okay. I think it's acceptable if you're cheering for a shorter game. That's
right.
Fair.
Yeah, if you're not cheering for someone, yeah, either way in the game, I guess you can go that route as
exactly.
well.
Exactly.
So I get it.
Great game, though. Carl Wise hit the walk-off. But the Red Wings last night... That's what all the conversations about it should be, because that was a disappointing ending. And you saw the Tampa Bay Lightning convert on 3 of 5 power play. The Red Wings, in stark contrast, have 1 power play goal the whole series.
Mm-hmm.
In game 2, in game 3, that was a 2-0 victory. The Red Wings were still 0 of 7 in power play opportunities. This is something that the team needs to address. They just don't look organized and dedicated and attack-minded always when they're in the man advantage zone. So I think there are a few things this team needs to work on. With all of that being said, I think you need to remember this is a 1-8 seed. This is how you'd expect this series to go. Now, whether that's satisfactory for the Red Wings, that's another question. But at the same time, the Tampa Bay Lightning are the better team. They should be winning these games.
Yeah, they are certainly the better hockey team, Isaac. And but I will say, to sort of combat that 1-8 conversation, the Lightning entered this series pretty beaten up. Again, you know, with Strawman and Stamkos out, it really gave the Wings a chance to really compete in this series and possibly pull out the dub. But, you know, time and time again, the Lightning have shown that when it comes to those tight situations, it's not like the Wings are getting blown out game after game after game here. They are competitive, and they have been competitive, despite what it says now in the series lead, the Lightning leading 3-1. These have been competitive matchups. And, you know, when you really break it down, and, you know, I think it goes back to that old adage in sports when evaluating what happened last night. The Wings, to me, Isaac, they came out too flat, and they did not close it out with any energy. That's the thing. It's always how you start and how you finish in a contest. And the Wings, to start this game, at one point in the first period, they were outshot 10-2. So from an aggressive standpoint, the Lightning were the clear aggressor when that puck hit the ice to start that game. And in less than 6 minutes, they were already in the penalty box, which allowed that first goal to get on the board. So the Wings, just to start that game, mentally, Isaac, they were not in tune and really acting with a sense of urgency that they were down in this series. We've got to take advantage. We're at home here. This is a golden opportunity for us. Let's possibly tie this series. That mentality, that sense of urgency did not exist for the Red Wings from the very start of that game. And they dug themselves in an early hole, and they tried to rely on a comeback to sort of make things interesting, which it almost happened. It really almost happened. Because I tell you what, there was a close goal by Dylan Larkin, which hit the post on the fourth power play for the Wings, that it was so crazy. You heard the fans. As soon as it hit the post, you heard the fans at the Joe start cheering. They immediately thought that goal went in. And as you heard in that montage, Isaac, the announcers thought that the puck hit the back of the net. Just imagine if that goal goes in. It's a game of inches. If that goal goes in, possibly, you know, we go to extra periods here, maybe a shootout, and the Wings pull this thing out. Who knows what can happen? But hey, if they would have started with that aggressiveness instead of trying to pick it up in that second period, things could have totally changed, I thought. And you also got to give a lot of credit to Tampa Bay, though, when it comes to their overall power play. Not only did they score three power play goals in this game last night, but they also had 4 power play kills when, you know, going against the Wings here. And, you know, when looking at over the first three games of the series, Tampa Bay and the Wings, absolutely horrid when it comes to the power play, Isaac. Tampa Bay entered this series 1 of 14. Detroit, 1 of 17 over the course of the first three games of the series. Could not convert on a power play goal, and didn't we see that completely go out the window last night? So it's going to be really tough here. The writing's on the wall now. I mean, if you look at it, okay, you go on Tampa Bay for Game 5 on Thursday. It's going to be very, very tough. Tampa Bay is going to come out just like they were in Game 4, very aggressive with an opportunity to close this series out. But if you look at it, okay, they go on the road. Let's say the Wings do pull that out, all right? And we're looking at a 3-2 series. They come home with an opportunity to tie the series up at 6 games. It's possible. I may be reaching here. I just don't see the Wings pulling out that Game 5, though.
No, I think Game 5's where it ends. Going back to Tampa Bay, maybe if it was in the Joe, the Wings would be able to rally. You saw a few octopi on the ice last night. You saw the home atmosphere really boost this team forward, especially in the second period where the Red Wings came from 2-0 down to tie it up. But at the same time, it's not in Detroit. It is in Tampa Bay, and at the end of the day, although they're hampered by injuries, although they've had so many organizational problems throughout this series, the Tampa Bay Lightning should and I believe will win this game. I thought Detroit and Jeff Blashill had a great game plan in Game 3, and that's how they were able to succeed and steal that one from the number one seed. But at the end of the day, that was a shock upset. I don't think history repeats itself.
Well, at the end of the day, Isaac, you got to give yourself a chance. And if you're constantly in the penalty box and playing with the man short, it's going to be tough to compete in any series, let alone the number one team in the conference. So, we announced on our current Sports Quick Headliners a few weeks ago that Pavel Datsyuk, of course, wants to retire after this season and go to Russia. Possibly we've seen the last of Pavel Datsyuk at the Joe. That might have been his last game at the Joe unless the Wings convince him otherwise to come back. Also, I want to get a hats off to Gustav Nyquist, though. He got a goal in that game last night. And previous to last night, he had scored only one goal in his previous 20 games. And he's one of the guys I called out when we were given a preview of Game 4 yesterday, on yesterday's show, Isaac. So when you look at that, and I called out Datsyuk and Nyquist, also Tatar, those guys have to get some goals here to get some confidence brewing. And Nyquist was able to find, finally, the back of the net. So that's good for him as well. Ben Bishop, 26 saves. Peter Mrazek, 30 saves. So now moving forward here, I mean, I think, you'll be far-fetched to find anyone that still believes that the Wings are going to pull this thing out. And I got to ask you, Isaac, when evaluating, again, as I mentioned, this would be, if the Wings get eliminated here, this would be the third straight year that the Wings have gone out in the first round of the playoffs. And I understand 25 years is mind-blowing. My jaw is still on the floor when I think about how the Wings have the longest postseason streak in North American sports history. But again, when you put on that Red Wings jersey, I mean, you're expected to compete for championships. The Wings are like the Yankees of baseball, okay? It has so much history, so much tradition. So if you go out in the first round, let alone do it three straight years, I don't know if that's a positive takeaway from this season.
Well, do you think it's rebuilding time then for
the Wings? It is. And that's a conversation we had with Jason Ruff, our hockey aficionado, last week on the show. And I do think some retooling has to take place. When you look at the young talent on this team, that's something to really harp on. I love the young talent on this team because I do believe they have a lot of young talent that can mature and get better with playoff experience like this. But at the same time, there's always a sense of urgency for the Wings because you're expected to go to the semifinals within the conference and possibly go to the Stanley Cup Finals and compete for a championship. And when you come short of that, it is looked at as a failure, Isaac.
Yeah, I agree. I think it's time to rebuild, too, simply because you're not sacrificing championships and you're not going to sink to the bottom cell of the NHL. You are going to be okay because you've already got so much young talent. I mean, Anthony Seau, more of an example than anyone else, along with Dylan Larkin, both of those players, I believe, are up from the Grand Rapids Griffin system, as well as Jeff Blashill, the coach. He knows that farm system very well, and he's produced talent over and over again.
I like Jeff Blashill a lot too. I think he's a great coach. His first year to do what he to really rally the Wings at the end of the year when it looked like the playoffs were a 50-50 shot. You know, I a lot of credit to what Blashill was able to do in his first year, I think.
Exactly. So you've already got that foundation for going forward, and I think that's okay. I think you slump maybe for 2 years, mm-hmm. but then you immediately rebound and you're right back into the playoff picture. And instead of saying, when is the streak going to end? Because right now that is the question for the Red Wings. 25 years right now, how much longer can they sustain it? Instead of that, you start saying, when can we get back into a championship mentality? Because that's been a long time away, and it's about time that the Red Wings, Hockey Town USA, returns to that greatness.
Folks, what do you think? Call in 517-355-9527, 517-355-9527. All right, I want to, before we get to our first break, I want to bring this story up because it is just a shocking story that no one saw coming, and I had to do a double take on my phone when I got the notification via ESPN Score Center app. But UFC featherweight champion Conor McGregor will not fight Nate Diaz at UFC 200 on July 9th in Las Vegas. Whether he will fight again remains a question. Now, UFC president Dana White announced Tuesday night on SportsCenter that the promotion has pulled McGregor from the main event at UFC 200 due to the Irishman's unwillingness to fly to Las Vegas and participate in mandatory promotional activities. Now, the news came hours after McGregor sent the MMA world into chaos by tweeting that he has decided to retire young. This is exactly what McGregor tweeted at 2:29 p.m. yesterday. Quote, I have decided to retire young. Thanks for the cheese. Catch you later. Now, ESPN has attempted to contact McGregor and members of his camp, but no one was available for immediate comment. And, you know, speculation around why McGregor is making this decision centers on a fight that took place over the weekend out in Dublin. Portuguese welterweight Yaho Rafiero Carvalho passed away after suffering a knockout loss at an MMA event. Now, Carvalho, he was stopped by Charlie Ward the third round of the fight at an April 9th event promoted by Irish organization Total Extreme Fighting. TEF on Tuesday issued a statement via Facebook describing the aftermath of Carvalho's bite, saying, quote, following the referee stoppage, Jaho, who was representing Portuguese club Team Nobrega, was assessed by doctors and medical staff at the on-site medical office as per procedure. The statement goes on to read, it was determined that he should be sent to the hospital. In the hospital, he received emergency treatment and transferred to ICU later that evening. TEF stated that Carvalho passed away Monday night after 2 days of the best medical care and treatment in Beaumont Hospital. And guess who watched that fight live? Yes, it was Conor McGregor. And he actually wrote on a Facebook page last week, quote, to see a young man doing what he loves, competing for a chance at a better life, and then to have it taken away is truly heartbreaking. So, Isaac, this is the line that's being drawn as to McGregor retiring and that thought process when it comes to his overall health in the world of UFC. A lot of people are speculating that it's because McGregor saw what took place when it comes to Carvalho's fight and Carvalho sadly passing away. Such a sad story. That experience is why McGregor has decided to retire young. What do you make of this news?
Yeah, it's very convoluted at this point still, since we have a lone tweet from Conor McGregor not even explaining his reasoning, just stating that he is retiring from MMA. I think that definitely played a part in his decision-making. At the same time, I would be shocked if Conor McGregor is able to remove himself from fighting, from the spotlight, from everything which he cherishes about the sport for the rest of his career. He's 27. I mean, this guy is still young. He still has his prime ahead of him, or he's right in it right now. So I would be surprised if this is the last we see of Conor McGregor. At the same time, I think UFC 200 is off now that's been called by all parties, just about including Nate Diaz, who tweeted, in my opinion, sarcastically, well, since the fight's off, looks like I'm retiring too. So
right.
I think it's an event which definitely postpones the boxing and MMA fighting career of Conor McGregor. At the same time, I don't think this necessarily spells out the end.
And I tell you what, if McGregor has decided to make this decision, if the decision, you know, does go through that he is retiring at, again, such a young age, and that reason is a direct correlation to what occurred to that young fighter this past week, and again, that young fighter losing his life in the ring, you can't blame him. You can't blame him because, you know, when you see something like that in person, I'm pretty sure that would shake up any fighter, you know, let alone Conor McGregor. And it takes so much guts to be a fighter. You know, I sit back and watch UFC sometimes, and many of what makes the sport so appealing, you know, when you see two guys on the ground just pummeling each other, and you see the blood, and I mean, a lot, you know, it goes back to that old saying when it comes to news, if it bleeds, it leads. Well, people love UFC because of its violent nature. It's intriguing to watch it because of that. It's intriguing to watch two guys go in a ring and just go at it. But I also have asked the question whether or not UFC is a bit too brutal. You know, I've always contemplated that, even though it's so entertaining to watch two guys who are so well-versed in mixed martial arts, they're supremely talented. But I just, you know, sometimes when I watch these fights and to see the injuries that take place and to see certain knockouts, I always ask myself, is it a bit too far? You know, it certainly is. It fun to watch? Yeah, some people like that stuff. You know, the proof is in the ratings when it comes to that. But is there a line that's crossed at all? So that's the question I want to throw out there. What do you think? 517-355-WKAR, 517-355-9527. Call in. What do you think about McGregor's decision as of right now? Again, we're speculating here. Again, he hasn't followed up and confirmed this. But again, the crypto tweet of, quote, I have decided to retire young. Thanks for the cheese. Catches later. You know, and if this has a direct correlation to what took place, again, a young fighter this past weekend losing his life in the ring, what do you think about the overall sport? And what sort of conversation will this open within the sport if it is indeed true? Call in 517-355-9527. Let's hit our first break. When we come back, we will invite live in studio Anthony Iani, former Michigan State men's basketball player and renowned national motivational speaker. You do not want to miss this one, folks. You are listening to WKAR's Current Sports. Welcome back to WKAR's Current Sports. All right, folks, he is live in studio with us. I tell you what, he is a dear friend of the show, and he has had really just one remarkable career post his basketball career, folks. His name is Anthony Iani of the Michigan Department of Civil Rights, one of the most sought-after anti-bullying motivational speakers in the region. Now, at the age of 4, Ant was diagnosed with pervasive developmental disorder, which is on the autism spectrum. Now, doctors and specialists told Anthony's parents that he would barely graduate from high school, would never graduate from college, and would never have a shot at being an athlete, and would likely live in a group institution with other autistic kids for his adult life. His family was devastated, but pledged they would help Anthony be successful no matter what. And he is, folks. Despite bullies, adversity, and numerous personal challenges, Ant worked hard and never gave up. Not only did he earn his bachelor's degree from Michigan State University in sociology, he is the first known athlete with autism to play Big Ten basketball right here under the tutelage of Coach Tom Izzo and the Michigan State men's basketball team. Anthony has pledged his life and career to help those who face similar challenges. And again, he is in studio right now. Ant, how you doing, my man? Always good to see you.
Thanks, Al. Good to be back, my man.
Now, first, before we dive into, of course, the month of April being Autism Awareness Month and your battle, which has, you know, been so remarkable and so inspiration throughout your time while playing basketball here at Michigan State and now to your time as a motivational speaker, I want to bring up, I got to start off kind of on a low note, but I want to talk about, of course, the loss in the first round. The Michigan State men's basketball team going out to Middle Tennessee State. I got to ask, Ant, are you over the loss yet?
I'm over it. I don't know about anybody else, but I was actually down in North Carolina for a family wedding, and my wife's aunt and uncle are Duke alums, and her uncle played football there and her aunt played volleyball there, and so the whole trip I was so upset. But my wife's uncle, he's like, hey, he said Duke lost to Mercer 2 years ago. We lost to Lehigh a few years ago. He's like, I know how you guys feel. So I said, yeah. I said, it's. So you know what? Like, you lose, but that's March Madness, though, man. That's the beauty of it. I mean, you saw all the crazy stuff that happened later on that night. I mean, Northern Iowa hits a half-court shot at the buzzer to beat Texas.
Exactly.
And then you watch Villanova win at the buzzer for the national championship. So, I mean, that's what March Madness is all about. But, you know, it's a tough loss, but, you know, you move on. You know, you move on to next season. You work hard on the things that you screwed up on in the tournament, and you just don't make the same mistakes next year.
So true. Now, Anthony, you heard in our current sports quick hit headliners that, of course, Marvin Clark Jr., now former Michigan State men's basketball forward, he has decided to transfer to St. John's, playing with the Red Storm. And also, of course, we are still awaiting on a school choice from Javon Best. But he also decided to transfer from the program as well and forego his next year of eligibility with the Michigan State program. I got to ask, Ant, how surprised were you when you heard about the transfer news concerning Clark Jr. and Best?
Marvin Clark really surprised me because I thought he was a guy that was going to be around here for 4 years, make a huge impact, maybe even start next year with the freshman we got coming in. So that one really surprised me. And then Javon, you know, I kind of knew he wasn't playing a whole lot, and, you know, it really didn't surprise me that he wanted to go some other place and get more minutes. But, you know, I mean, those guys wanted to change. And, you know, me being a former transfer myself, like, I needed to change. Like, yeah, did I come to Michigan State? Yeah, I did. I didn't play a whole lot, which I didn't care about, but – you know, at the end of the day, like, I needed a change of scenery, and it worked out the best for me. And, you know, that's what those guys needed. And I wish them nothing but the best. You know, I have nothing but love and respect for those guys because, you know, they're still part of the Spartan family. I mean, Tom Herzog transferred, and he still comes back to reunion. So I will not be surprised if Javon Best and Marvin Clark still end up coming to reunions like 5-10 years from now.
And that's something that Tom Izzo always stresses. I mean, even though, you know, he has players to transfer from the program, just like any other program across the nation, but at the same time, you know, there's no sour grapes there. You know, right. End on good terms. They understand it's a mutual respect there. And, hey, you have to do what's best for you and your goals, right?
Right, exactly. I mean, it's like you hit it. It's kind of like the NBA. It's a business, if you will. I mean, guys are going to go places at first that they don't want to be at. You know, it doesn't work out for a couple of years, and then they find another place where they can call home after that. So there's no love lost between those, you know, between Coach Izzo and, you know, Marvin and Javon. Like, those guys are always going to be, you know, talking to each other, texting each other. You know, coach is going to be watching them too because he wants to make sure that those guys are successful, you know, with whatever they do in their careers.
Very true. Now, and of course, Spartan fans got a double whammy of news.
Mm-hmm.
We'll get to the first, layer of news that occurred on Monday of last week around 8:30 via Twitter. But also, you know, in less than a span of 24 hours, they got the news that Deontay Davis, you know, star freshman for the Michigan State men's basketball team, decided to take his talents to the NBA and declare for the NBA draft. Do you think Davis leaving early is the right decision?
In my opinion, no. I honestly think Didi should have stayed one more year, you know, work on his offensive skills a little bit more, work on his footwork a little bit more, and bulk up a little more. You know, obviously, you know, he's a very good player. I'm not going to deny that. And I'm not going to deny the kid an opportunity to possibly be a lottery pick and get $1.5 million as a pick your first year. I'm not going to deny a kid chasing his dreams, but – you know, when you have a chance to come back and play for a team that's going to be scary good and you can be possibly the number one pick in the draft next year and make even more money, and that means endorsements as the number one pick, you know, I probably would have done that. But that's just me, though. But, again, I mean, I think he's going to pan out well. It'll be interesting to see how he does in his first year. But, I mean, I kind of compare Didi's draft status to Steven Adams of Oklahoma City. I mean, Steven Adams came out as a freshman, didn't have, like, the star numbers, but OKC drafted him because, one, he's a big man, and, two, he gets rebounds and he's quick, you know, blocking shots on the defensive end. So he doesn't have to do anything offensively because you got Kevin Durant and Russell Westbrook doing all that. So, I mean, if Didi's going to go to a team that's offensively, you know, loaded with guys like OKC, all he has to do is get rebounds and play defense. So, I mean, if you look Steven Adams' numbers up, I mean, he didn't average double-digit points. He averaged double-digit rebounds and got, like, four blocks a game or whatever. Mm-hmm. But offensively, he didn't do a whole lot. He was still a top 15 draft picks. So I kind of like to compare Didi's draft status to Steven Adams, which they're pretty much almost close in comparison.
Now, Ann, do you think a lot of this had to do with, you know, when you sort of trying to dissect, you know, the thought process behind why Davis decided to make this leap? Do you think a lot of this had to do with the fear of the unknown? You know, again, I always say with sports, you never know if you're not guaranteed your next game, let alone your next practice. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
And when you look at the draft stock this year, I mean, if Deontay is a top 20 draft pick, as many scouts and many NBA personnel are slating him to be, I mean, who knows what the pick of the litter will look like next year? Maybe the draft stock is so good next year that it may drop that number for Deontay Davis. So is it a case of striking while the iron is kind of hot right now?
I think it is, because, I mean, you look at guys who are football players in particular. I mean, you got guys who, you know, I'll use, like, you know, Todd Gurley, for example. You know,
right.
Todd was amazing as a sophomore, and then he was playing great his first three games, and then he tears his ACL. Luckily for him, he's back to where he was, and he's going to be even better. But, you know, who knows if that knee injury could have been worse, he would have been a top 10 pick. He may have been an unrestricted free agent in the draft, and he wouldn't be playing or starting in St. Louis. So
right.
A lot of that comes to mind too, because it's like, okay, well, I can tear my ACL tomorrow, or I can break my foot and I'm done for the season. And then how's my draft stock going to be? Because you look at Caris LeVert at Michigan. Caris LeVert was a lottery pick to start the year, and then he got hurt, and now he's projected to be a late round, second round pick. So It has a lot. It takes a toll on you to think about that. It really does. And so, you know, that's why I applaud Didi, because it's like, okay, you're thinking ahead for your future, which is good, but do you really think, you know, you could have come back, especially with the right strength coaches, with the right trainers that we got to make sure that we prevent injuries around here, you know, could you think one more year wouldn't have hurt? So, I mean, Gary Harris was smart doing that, and Gary actually panned out pretty well right now, and he's still panning out pretty well.
Very true. Anthony Iani, of course, and is a former Michigan State men's basketball player and now renowned national motivational speaker. And again, before we dive into your just really blossoming career when it comes to your post-basketball career, and again, the first layer of news that took place before Deontay decided to take his talent to the NBA was that Josh Jackson, the number one basketball recruit in the entire nation, again, weighing his options between Arizona, Michigan State, and Kansas, he announced via Twitter on Monday of last week at 8:30 p.m., actually 8:33 p.m. to be exact, that he was taking his basketball talents to Kansas, not Michigan State. And, you know, I must say, Ant, when, you know, putting my finger to the pulse of Spartan fans out there, I felt as though, again, you're going to have a few that were out there saying, oh, my goodness, how could he do this to us in panic mode. But for the most part, I felt like Spartan Nation kind of had the demeanor like, okay, we didn't get Josh Jackson, but look at the incoming class that we have coming in. Cassius Winston, Miles Bridges, Nick Ward, Josh Langford. So I don't think the panic meter was at a 10 when looking at the tweet that came out last week.
No, it wasn't. And because, you know, and I was telling Kevin Gale when I was on a radio show last week, This isn't the first time we lost out on a number one recruit. Remember Jabari Parker? Lost out on him. Remember Jahlil Okafor and, you know, the Jones kid? Lost out on both of them. They were 1-2 in the country. So this is not the first time we lost out on the number one player.
Right.
So when people are panicking, I'm like, you know what? Just be fine. Did you forget who our coach is?
Relax.
You know,
Aaron Rodgers, relax, right?
It's like with our football program, too. Like, Connor Cook and those guys leave. Oh, man, we're going to have a down year. I'm like, do you forget who our football coaches are? Like, we have one of the best staffs in the country. So, but you know what? Like you said, we got a great recruiting class coming in. And, you know, Miles Bridges, he's got a chance to be a one-and-done player. Like, watching him in the McDonald's All-American game, I was like, man, like, I'd rather have him over Josh Jackson. I really would. Because if you think about last year, Al, with Caleb Swanigan, everybody was so excited, you know, and then he decommits, goes to Purdue, and everybody's like, oh, man, we're not going to be that good. Well, you know, he goes to Purdue. You know, I look at the kid, I'm like, you know what? We didn't miss out on much.
Mm-hmm.
We didn't. I mean, with the guys we got coming in, I would take Deontay Davis over him any day, anytime.
Right.
And so right now, looking at Miles Bridges and Josh Jackson, like, Miles is a team guy from what I've been hearing. Kid wants to play defense. He wants to get at it. He wants to get in your face and just, like, stop the ball every time. And he's going to score because he has more hops, in my opinion, than Shannon Brown did when Shannon Brown was here his freshman year. I mean, Miles, that windmill off the backboard as a high school, it's impressive.
How nice was that?
That was very impressive. Oh. And I don't know if you saw the one in the Jordan Classic, the East-West game, but he had a tip dunk, his handle, when he was going up for it, but he still regained it one hand, slammed it one hand.
I did not see that. I'm going to Google that.
You
have
to look it up, because I was like, man, like, no high school player in the country should be doing that, and he's doing that. So, you know what? they're in a good state right now. I'm not worried about next year's team, and personally, I think they're going to surprise some people.
I think so as well. I mean, that incoming recruiting class, mixed in with the talent that's already on the team, I think it's going to be a very good year for Izzo and company. Okay, and let's talk about your post basketball endeavors. Mm-hmm. And I want to talk about what this month means to you, though, because I know that it is Autism Awareness Month in April. What does this month mean as far as the personal connection that you have when battling autism growing up?
I mean, it means a lot to me because this is a month where not just me, but everybody in the autism community, deserves the recognition they deserve. And, autism in general needs more awareness. I mean, we're doing a better job today, creating more awareness and showing and telling people what autism is and what causes it, what the characteristics are. But we need to do more. It's like me as a speaker. I joke with people all the time that, I need to repay all my teachers in my life. Like, I'm indebted to them for what they've done to me. And people would have said to me, oh, well, you're doing that now while you're speaking. I'm like, no, I need to do more. Like, I need to, like I want to throw them the biggest party this century's ever seen. And so, but even as a speaker, Al, it's like, all right, I've done this, but I got to do more. Or it's like, as a basketball player, okay, I shot free throws, but I got to do more. And so that's what this month means to me is, like, we're creating awareness, but at the end of the day, we got to do more. And for me personally, to be able to go out and represent over 7 million people in the autism community around the world, I mean, that's the biggest honor and privilege that I can ever have as a speaker.
So I got to know, Ant, because we discuss this all the time when we have you on the show, and your schedule is pretty insane.
It
I know
is.
You're always traveling. You're always in a different state doing this and doing that. What's an average schedule like for you, I should say, on an average week?
Well, on an average week, at most, I'm on the road 5 days a week.
On the road 5 days a week?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, my.
Mm-hmm.
Good. And you have a little one, I know.
I got a little one. And that's the one part about my job, Al, I hate, is whenever I'm out doing out-of-state trips, or even if I'm in Michigan, but I'm 2 hours away from home and I'd stay overnight, and I'm away from my wife and my kid, I hate it. Absolutely hate it. I mean, I was in Nebraska for last month for 4 days. I did 13 presentations in 72 hours. These were schools and universities I went to. And then I get home the next day. I'm home for 12 hours. I got to hop in my car, go up north of Indian River, do 3 presentations the next day. I'm home for a day, and then I get on a plane the next day and go to New York for 2 days.
Huh.
So I dropped my son off at my mom's house, and when I left, he was with my dad, and he saw me pick up my suitcase and walk out the door, and he just lost it. I'm like, he knows. He knows. And every time, I pick up my suitcase and I walk out the door and I see him putting his hands on the door at my house, I'm like, I hate this right now. I hate it.
Oh,
but
that's tough.
It is, but thank God for FaceTime. Man? I mean, because anytime I'm on the road, as soon as I'm done, I'm always FaceTiming my wife and my kid. And anytime I just see him smile, whenever I'm on the road, it means, okay, you know what? He's safe. He's good. My wife is good. That's the important thing. And when I get home, it's the first thing I do. I don't even unpack. I throw my suitcase on the stairs, and I just go play with my little guy.
That's beautiful.
That's the most rewarding part about my day.
And it's a catch-22 because, Anthony, you obviously love what you do. And
I do.
You're impacting so many lives while doing it. But, again, on the flip side of that, you don't get the adequate time that you would like with your family. So I got to ask you, Ant, how long do you foresee you doing what you do with this sort of schedule?
As long as I can. I've always told people, I want to keep doing this for a long, long time. But I think once my son gets to high school, playing sports, doing whatever, then I'm really going to have to sit back and go, okay, got to schedule around his games, schedule around parent-teacher conferences so I'm there. So I'm already planning ahead for the future of what I got to do with this. And, talking to people, it's not a bad idea to plan for the future. So I'm excited
right.
to see what the future holds for me. But as far as doing this, I want to do this for as long as I can because – I've shared this with you and many people, Al. I want to be the best at what I do in the state. Personally, I think I'm at that point right now where I'm very good at what I do. In the country, I want to be the best. In the world one day, I want to be the best. I got a lot of work to do for me to accomplish those two things, but you know what? That's what I want to do. And what inspires me to do that is my son, is my wife, and the people I talk to, the students, teachers, student-athletes, they all inspire me to do that. And so I'm going to do whatever it takes to work my butt off and be the best in the world one day.
I absolutely love that drive, and I can tell you're obsessed with it. I love it. I love it, Ant. Now, when you look at, the impact that you've had on countless individuals, Anthony, and, a glaring statistic comes to my mind when I think about this. 65 to 90% of kids with autism become targets for bullying. Anthony, what's the most gratifying part of what you do?
The responses I get. Just the stories that students share with me that they won't share with parents, teachers, or students. And I didn't get my degree at Michigan State in education. I got in sociology, so social science. So I have nothing to, I have no educational background as a teacher, you know, principal, whatever. And for these students to open up to me, that's a, it's a very good feeling. And actually last week, Al, you'll love this. And I've always told people there have been places I go to where I have bullies apologize to their victim. Well, I was at Amberdeen Elementary School in Grand Rapids last Friday. And and this is before I went to Iowa. So after the assembly, I'm talking to the principal, and this third grader, probably 8, 9 years old, comes up to me. And apparently she'd been bullying her friends, like everybody in her classroom. So the principal talked to her the day before I spoke, and she gave her a homework assignment. That was everybody's name in her class on a list, including the teacher, saying sorry for, you know, what I did, blah, blah, blah. And I'm thinking to myself, okay, a third grader is going to be like, yeah, right, I'm not going to do this. So after the assembly, the student said, you know, I got to finish that sheet right now after what Mr. Iani talked about. And I want to get up in front of the class and read it to everybody. And I said to the principal, I said, can I sit in on this? Because I get letters, Al, and messages from people that tell me that, but I never see it live, like never seen it live before. So I'm like, I got to see this. So I sit down in this classroom and the principal talks, and this 8, 9-year-old girl gets up, has this list of like 30 people in her class, goes through every single person. I'm sorry for calling you this. I'm sorry for pushing you in the hallways. I'm sorry for doing this, doing that. Every single person, when she got to the teacher, Mrs. So-and-so, I apologize for being disrespectful to you. And I sat there, Al. I'm like, this is what I love. This is the one part I love about my job is stuff like this. Just seeing stuff like this actually happen. And I got in my car, and I was so geeked. I was so excited. I'm like, you know what? This is real. Like, and you know what? But I'm not the reason for that. You know, she wanted to do that. She wanted to be the change that her school wants to see. And
right.
It started with her, and I applaud that third grader for that. But driving 2 hours back, before, you know, going to Metro later on, and I'm on the plane going to Des Moines, Iowa, and I'm like, you know what? This is special. Like, I will not trade this for anything that I do.
That
I really
feeling
wouldn't.
Is priceless, isn't it?
It was.
When you, cause you, it you know, is. When you have moments like that, Anthony, you realize that this is why I was put on this earth.
Exactly.
This is what I'm supposed to be doing.
Exactly.
And you get that feeling in the core of your soul, and it drives you. I can only imagine. And you are doing one remarkable job, Anthony. And I got to ask, Anthony, when it comes to the logistics of your job, when you go out and talk to a school or a group of kids, do you have different messages that you tailor toward that demographic, or do you kind of just have the same speech as you go along? I mean, how do you mix things up, if you will?
So what I do, Al, when it comes to elementary schools, middle schools, and high school, the message is the same. As far as emotion levels go, when I get to middle school and high school presentations, my emotion levels go through the roof.
So you get raw with that?
I do. Where elementary school, I'm cool and calm because I don't want to scare the heck out of those kids.
Right.
And, you know, I don't want them to go home saying, this man was yelling at us all day, yada, yada, yada. So, but when I get to college, you know, college students and student athletes, like,
right.
I just talk about my story, and then I talk about a different message about, you know, perseverance, hard work is going to be the key to help you be successful in life, and advocating for yourself. And that's the one thing, Al, I touch base on with even the younger generations, because today's generation, and that's why there was a kid yesterday, I was at Potterville, this kid raised his hand, told the entire class, Mr. Iani's generation would kick our generation's butt. And I'm like, and here's why, Al, because our generation, we're tough mentally, right up in here.
Right.
Where today's generation, they're too scared because they're afraid that going to get the extra help is not cool enough, or getting advice from people, from their peers, family, is not cool enough because they think they're adults. I had an 18-year-old senior in high school say that to me. Well, I don't need help from anybody. I'm an adult. I know everything. And I looked at him and go, no, you don't. You don't know everything.
Right.
So, and that's why I advocate for college students. And that's the one thing that my academic coordinators here and at Grand Valley State taught me, was to utilize every single resource given to you in college. Because if you utilize that resource, it is a guarantee you will graduate college in 4 to 5 years.
Absolutely love it. Again, folks, if you're just now joining us here on WKAR's Current Sports, we are chatting with Anthony Iani, former Michigan State men's basketball player and renowned national motivational speaker. Now, to go back to those numbers, and again, 65 to 90% of kids with autism become targets for bullying. I got to know, throughout your time engaging with different kids across the nation and preaching your message, are those numbers, do we have an updated survey? Are those numbers starting to depreciate or are still on the incline?
As far as I know, I haven't seen like any new numbers or anything
okay.
like that.
Gotcha.
I would like to, though, because I know like where I found those numbers is CNN put out some like when I first started.
Okay.
And I was like, okay, you know, I had no idea about this. And then my colleague I used to work with, he was like, you know, you need to see this. And I'm like, all right, well, let's touch base on the bullying now, because I was bullied as a kid, been through that, done that. And let's share my story and see how people react to it. And so I would like to see CNN do another survey, because I would like to see if those numbers have increased or decreased or stayed the same.
I've always wondered that, because I've heard that. I mean, that those are high numbers. That's
they are.
50%. 65 to 90% of kids with autism
mm-hmm.
are bullied.
Mm-hmm.
That's glaring stuff. So I would like to see an updated survey as well. And as far as those out there listening, Anthony, that want to check out what you do, or if there's a teacher that happens to have the radio on right now that says, you know what, I want to have Anthony come talk to our little ones because they need to hear this message, how can they get in touch with you?
So if they go to our website, www.relentlesstour.com. We have a bio page on there. We have a calendar on there of where I'm going to be going. And we have a request form that people can fill out. So whether it's schools, colleges, businesses, organizations, whatever, conferences, they fill out that request form and they can get me to come to wherever they want me to come. And then Anthony Iani on Facebook is my fan page. And then follow me on Twitter or Instagram, which is AI44LYD.
And we'll be sure to, when we post this episode after we get off the air in, what, 4 minutes here, we'll be sure to put that information there as well. And last thing, where are you headed now?
So pretty quiet week right now for me, which is, I'm not complaining.
Not complaining about that, right?
I need one of these. But next week I'm heading to Berry County for a couple days. I'm heading to Middleville, heading to Hastings. And then I got other places I'm going to after that.
You got to have an assistant, Anthony, don't you?
Well, I do, but, I mean, my schedule's on my phone, so I can, you know, if I wanted to pull it out right now, but it's like I can't memorize everything on my schedule. But I know I just got another request from a school in Ohio today, so I'll be going back there in a couple of weeks.
Well, I tell you what, you keep up the great work, and we love having you on, and we will continue to do so throughout the summer months as well. So, Anthony Iani, thank you so much, and appreciate your time, all right?
Thanks, Al. Appreciate it, man.
All right. Well, before we get out of here, 3 minutes left here in the show. Isaac, you know when we had the discussion yesterday when it came to Michigan State football spring practice, and, of course, news breaking earlier that Craig Evans, defensive tackle, and Montez Sweat, defensive end, are now released from the team. They are no longer Spartans. And, you know, just that just really interesting relationship that D'Antonio has with those two. They've been a headache, apparently. So I tell you what, the news broke this week. And, of course, a brave reporter decided to ask him his thoughts on Evans and Sweat not joining the team, not being a part of the team anymore. And here's what Coach D had to say.
Is there anything you can add to Montez and Craig leading
nope.
the team? What does that mean for the defensive?
It doesn't
matter.
Did you guys read that? Did you guys read the articles? That's all we need to say.
Asking about the rest.
That's always they say. Next.
Yeah, I really am. I think we've got a lot of strength, a lot of different positions on this football team. You know, we got
numbers. You know, that's always good if you have numbers. If you have guys that can play and are. Like what I used to always, I sort of determine, are they functional? Can they go in the game? They know what to do.
So, Isaac, we knew that response was coming, right?
Yeah. Yeah. Brave reporter, like you said. Rather a fearless question. I can't say I would have asked it. But at the same time, I also probably wouldn't have asked it because I know the answer would have been either next, no comment, or keep it moving.
But it's so funny, though, because if you look at his second question, his follow-up, he said, okay, how would that affect the defense? Which is a legit question.
That is
fair. But D'Antonio didn't want to hear the names Evans or Sweat at all, so he completely shut him down. Also, quick notes here. Offensive lineman Brian Allen chosen as the number one pick in the draft yesterday for the spring game to the White Squad. The second straight year that Allen has been named and drafted number one overall. And also the green team took defensive tackle Malik McDowell first among defensive linemen. That's going to be a position to look at this Saturday at the spring game. All right, folks, thanks so much to all of you out there for tuning in to this afternoon's version of Current Sports with me, Al Martin, right here on WKAR AM 870 East Lansing. Much thanks to Anthony Iani for joining me live in studio, and much thanks to all of you out there for tuning in and listening to WKAR's Current Sports. Have a great day, and as always, be easy, people.